From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo says he's raising the minimum wage for state workers to $15 an hour. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the latest from the trial of former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, and will take you to a Common Core listening session in the North Country. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Here, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced this week he's raising the minimum wage for state workers to $15 an hour. That did not stop advocates from protesting at the Dunkin' Donuts at the state capitol, saying the governor's recent phased-in wage increase for fast food workers is too slow. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo, at a union rally, announced he'll raise the minimum wage for state workers to $15 an hour by 2018 in New York City and by 2021 in the rest of the state.
We are going to lead by example, and today I announce that we're going to establish a public sector minimum wage, and we're going to start in our own house, and every employee of the state, we will adopt this law, and there'll be a $15 minimum wage for all state employees.
The act makes New York the first state in the nation to eventually pay its minimum wage public workers $15 an hour. It affects around 10,000 state employees, including custodial staff and office clerks.
What do we want?
15.
When do we want it?
Now.
Meanwhile, demonstrators targeted the Dunkin' Donuts on the first floor of the state capitol, even though Governor Cuomo already convened a special wage board to phase in a $15 an hour rate for fast food workers. But it won't be fully implemented in New York City until 2018 and upstate by the end of 2021. Mark Emanation with Citizen Action says that's too long.
They could just raise it for all New Yorkers by 2018 and do it over 3 years if they need to do that, help small businesses and not-for-profits get through it. But these great big huge corporations that are making millions and in some cases billions of dollars can afford to pay a living wage.
Treville Carruth, who works at Burger King and who spoke as part of a rally at the Capitol's ornate million-dollar staircase, says it's not soon enough for him. He says he tries to support himself and his wife on $8.85 an hour.
And she's epileptic and our expenses are not covered by just $8.85 check. So I'm here today fighting and supporting everyone in the cause.
It's nice to be back, let's put it that way.
Down the hall from the protesters, Republicans who ruled the state Senate were convening a pre-session strategy meeting. GOP leader John Flanagan responded to Governor Cuomo's plan to submit legislation to raise the minimum wage for all workers in the state when the new session starts in January. The Republican leader did not rule out a phased-in $15 an hour minimum wage, but he says several steps have to be taken first.
What I'm saying is that I'm open to discussions working with the members of our conference, talking about this issue in detail, properly vetting it. I'm not going to commit to anything one way or the other. That's something that we're going to discuss in great detail in our conference, and I have every expectation that we'll come to, whatever it may be, some kind of compromise.
Flanagan says he's not happy with Governor Cuomo's unilateral action to use a wage board to raise fast food workers' wages without any input from the legislature, calling it executive overreach. Cuomo has proposed adding some tax breaks for small businesses to better afford the wage increase when he does release his bill in 2016. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Another week.
Another dollar
or two, maybe $15 an hour. For example, Governor Cuomo announcing this week he's raising the minimum wage for state workers to $15 an hour. And, of course, that doesn't stop protesters who want more and want less.
Look, David, you know, $15 an hour is hardly going to put anybody in Chappaqua where the ex-presidents live. But it is classic liberal dogma that Cuomo, the governor, is now going towards. He's had some very bad adventures with the teachers, with the Moreland Act Commission, places that he probably shouldn't have gone in the first place. But now he's back to a sort of Hubert Humphrey classic Democratic position, which is do more for people, raise the minimum wage. And I see it as a subtle but important change in the persona of the governor. Whoever's he's getting advice from is giving him good advice, or if he's getting it from himself. He is playing a role which we have seen many times in Democratic politics and playing it well.
You mentioned education, and we see a story this week in the program from our Pat Bradley in the North Country where the Common Core Task Force has been going around doing listening sessions. Another good move by the governor?
Well, he got caught on this one, and he knows it. The testing and the teacher testing to the testing of students. So how to get out of it? Well, in New York politics, and in one of the things you do is you appoint yet another task force. Task force goes around and they listen. And we've been playing a good deal of that testimony, and people will come on and say, the teachers know best, you got to listen to more to the teachers. And what happens as a result of all of that is that the New York State race to the top will look significantly different, and the governor will have made his peace with the teachers when this is all over.
New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman making big news this week, Alan, as he has decided that daily fantasy sports betting sites like FanDuel and DraftKings are illegal gambling operations.
Well, they are illegal gambling operations. There's money involved in it. What is anybody trying to argue? That it's not gambling? Of course it's gambling. Is it gambling with money? Yes, of course it's gambling. There's money involved in it. So he's saying the right thing. Of course, it's one thing when one state, see, that's one of the big problems with the internet right now. The internet does not know state geographical boundaries. So that's going to be more difficult than if it was just an enterprise that was happening in New York. But he certainly is able to say, you know, we're going to hold people accountable if they're trying to, you know, use this gambling device in New York State. So he's going to get the satisfaction of knowing he's right, at least that.
New York will give patients with certain serious illnesses faster access to medical marijuana, Alan, as the state works out the details of its fullest medical cannabis program. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed legislation this week that will speed up access to the drug for people facing degenerative diseases, and there was quite a fight to get this done.
That's right, David. We know that medical marijuana is a precursor to general marijuana, no matter what anybody says. So, you know, when somebody is suffering from severe glaucoma or any one of the other diseases that we now think that marijuana can help, why not? I mean, it's just a why not test. When you have something like gay rights and you say, why can't people marry people that they're in love with? Why not? Who's it going to hurt? And who's medical marijuana going to really hurt? No one. And also, either you get marijuana legally or you get it illegally. If you get it illegally, you create a black market. We learned that from Prohibition. We know it in our lives. And it doesn't make much sense not to let the government have it, use it, dispense it, and tax it.
To New York, where attorneys at a personal injury law firm that hired then-State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver have testified he collected nearly $3.4 million in fees without doing any legal work. One of the attorneys took the witness stand at Silver's corruption trial this week, Alan, saying Silver had no role in the lucrative asbestos cancer cases once he referred clients to the firm.
David, we talked to the brilliant Blair Horner, who is the head of NYPERG, New York Public Interest Research Group, and he said what the prosecutors are trying to prove, if I heard him correctly, the prosecutors are trying to prove in that trial is not that somebody said, I will do this for you if you will do this back for me, because that's bribery and that's easy. But if you don't have that, what you try to do is show a pattern. And one of the things that's coming out of this trial is a huge sense of venality, that the speaker has so much power. You know, I've often quoted Robert Michels in The Iron Law of Oligarchy when we've been talking over the years, the idea that you have an assembly with all of these people in it, but when it comes down to it, you have Sheldon Silver, we heard, sitting there, and as people bring stuff to him, he goes, yes, no, yes, no, no, yes. That's sort of like Star Wars. You know, that's where it all is. And, of course, we're going to have more Star Wars in a very short time. People are lining up to get their tickets for yet another adventure in the New York State Legislature.
Our political observer, Alan Chartok, joining us. May the force be with us all.
Well, depends on what that force is.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A survey of 250 oil train bridges across America found that almost half showed signs of deterioration. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Waterkeeper Alliance and Forest Ethics have released what they claim is a first-of-its-kind investigative report entitled Deadly Crossing, Neglected Bridges, and Exploding Oil Trains. They say the report highlights significant public safety threats to communities and waterways from oil trains traveling over neglected infrastructure, including specific calls to action to address the dangerous practice. Waterkeeper Alliance staff attorney Larissa Liebman co-authored the report, driven by a 5,000% increase in U.S. oil train traffic since 2008.
The Department of Transportation predicts that we will see an average of 10 oil train accidents per year for the next two decades. We also are sad to report that as of this Sunday, we have to update the number of oil train disasters that have happened in 2015 from 5 to 7 after two different oil trains derailed and spilled in Wisconsin.
The activist groups began inspecting rail bridges in July.
Through the inspections, waterkeepers in 15 states inspected 250 rail bridges on known or potential oil train routes. Waterkeepers found that 46%, 114 rail bridges, showed signs of deterioration noticeable with the naked eye.
There are no federal engineering standards for rail bridges. The paper features photographs of three highly deteriorated bridges within the WAMC region. One in Kingston over the Rondout Creek is surrounded by residential areas and marinas. It has concrete support structures that are eroded at the base, as well as rusted and corroded steel structural elements. Another spans the Hudson north of West Point, west of Cold Spring. Its concrete is also badly eroded. When trains travel over the bridge, there is evidence of repeated vertical displacement or flexing of railbed components, according to the report. In the Albany area, a bridge over the Normanskill shows extensive cracking and major deterioration of concrete, with large chunks missing on the bases of the bridge footings. Cracks and missing concrete are also said to be observable on structures supporting the rail bed. The paper warns that a derailment on this bridge could threaten Port of Albany commerce. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy, a vocal critic of shipping crude oil by train, calls the report troubling and adds, the photos of the bridge over the Normanskill illustrate the severity of the problem. Rail carrier CSX did not immediately return a call for comment. Last spring, U.S. Senator Charles Schumer launched a push to increase the number of federal railroad bridge safety specialists nationwide.
There's just one inspector assigned to over 3,000 train bridges across New York State. And guess what? That inspector is not only responsible for the 3,000 bridges in New York State, but bridges in 13 other states.
There are 7 inspectors nationwide, and Schumer says it would take them 100 years to audit all of the nation's thousands of rail bridges.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
In the wake of a fierce debate over the implementation of the Common Core Education Standards in New York, Governor Cuomo appointed a task force to undertake a comprehensive review and present recommendations. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was in Lake Placid this week for one of the three simultaneous public listening sessions.
The Common Core Task Force is holding listening sessions in 10 regions around the state. Simultaneous sessions occurred Tuesday evening in the North Country, Central New York, and the Mohawk Valley. Two members of the 15-person task force were in Lake Placid to hear from North Country educators, administrators, and parents. Few praised Common Core. Some called for the system to be scrapped. Most described the system's faults and its negative impacts on students and teachers. Parent and teacher Tim Butler told the panelists Common Core is strangling his ability to teach as he focuses on test preparation.
The tests themselves, of course, are flawed. Last year, I wasn't supposed to, but I read a sixth grade test that was written at a postgraduate level. I know because I did a readability on it. It sickens me that I'm going to be judged on such unfair items. We should throw out the whole Common Core system and reboot and move on.
Good evening. My name is Bob Lattisere. I'm a teacher, a parent, a member of the NICET Task Force on the Common Core Standards. I'm hoping that we will definitely start making sure that teachers are involved in this process. They are the experts. Our governor is not the expert. Business leaders are not the expert. It's the teachers who see the kids every day. They are the ones that should be involved in this process, not just one or two. Let's bring them in herds to settle this problem and fix it.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Guglielmi. I'm a first grade teacher. I've been teaching kindergarten for a few years in the Common Core, and the Common Core is not appropriate for those students. It's not what they need. It doesn't match where they're coming from. People are not one-dimensional, and these students coming in are not one-dimensional either. The best decisions I've made under Common Core are when I try to ignore what I'm supposed to be doing and teach the kids what they actually need. That's a terrible way for our system to be running.
Not everyone who testified criticized the Common Core system. Clarkson University Vice President for External Relations, Kelly Cheesham.
Schools like Clarkson find ourselves on the front line of the effects of an education system that does not prepare enough students in New York State for the challenges of college and work, and especially in the STEM disciplines. This is why we strongly endorse the Common Core standards and Common Core aligned assessments advocated by the governor. We are at a crossroads, and it's critical that we continue implementing the core standards while making reasonable improvements to ensure that everyone, teachers have access to the professional resources they need, test questions that are age and grade level appropriate, and attention to ELL and special needs students. We have an opportunity to improve what has been a rocky start.
This was the third listening session Common Core Task Force member and Sleepy Hollow High School principal Carol Conklin Spillane has attended. She is hearing recurring themes in the testimony.
We kind of clustered them in categories, issues about curriculum, issues about assessments, and issues with the standards. And so our work will be to bring that back with all the research that we've done, influenced by the public outcry, and we're ready to sit down and do some work and come up with some hard recommendations.
New York State United Teachers Vice President Catalina Fortina is also a member of the task force.
Teachers want to be in the development of the standards that they are working with. What you hear in the forums is the passion that our educators have about really providing the right type of instruction for our students. What you're hearing is parents and educators joining forces to say, let's make the assessments really more responsive to teaching and learning. And it's about bringing the joy back into the classroom.
The Common Core Task Force must report back to the governor by early December.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Thank you.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new space under construction in Troy promises to be upstate New York's first incubator aimed at developing startups in the creative economy. Public affairs and marketing company Gramercy Communications is behind the Troy Innovation Garage, a 13,000-square-foot site located downtown. At a ceremony this week, officials kicked off the $1 million project. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard spoke with Gramercy CEO and founder Tom Nardacci, who says he expects the project to be completed by this time next year.
So this idea started with Gramercy being out of space, and our firm is growing. And also with me understanding what it's like to be a startup entrepreneur and knowing that we need space for creative entrepreneurs.
So that's how the incubator idea sort of came about.
The creative economy in the Capital Region's growing, just like Gramercy's growing, and people that work in our sector need space. They need to collaborate, they need services. There's a lot of people working on their own. And so we came up with this idea to put them all together under one roof.
What about the Capital Region gives you those creative people that you're looking for? What sort of assets do we have here that the incubator looks to be working with?
I think in the Capital Region has a stable economy, you know, bolstered by government, by healthcare, by higher ed, and we have a growing tech sector. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are on their own, who are working in the creative sector, servicing a whole variety of clients. And just similar to our story at Gramercy, we see that and realize that it'd be great if we can put people together and get them collaborating and working under one space.
So you're going to actually have the Gramercy Communications offices right in the back. So in addition to having the different people who would come here and rent space to do their own projects, you'll be able to assist them. They'll have that expertise right at hand.
So the building itself is 13,000 square feet, and 4,000 of it's going to be Gramercy Communications. And so the rest of it's going to be the Troy Innovation Garage. So the folks that come in and are part of the garage are going to have the benefit of having Gramercy anchor this location. And with that comes access to our staff, our team, our connections, our ideas, our experiences.
Now, what sort of ideas are you looking, when you talk about the creative economy, what sort of businesses are you hoping to cultivate and then get them started, give them a place to work, and then send them off onto their own? What sort of businesses are we looking at?
The definition of the creative class is pretty broad. And I think that what we're going to find here is that folks that are somehow connected to the field of communications, PR, marketing, advertising, graphic design, web designers, or service providers who serve those types of startups, lawyers, IP lawyers, architects, are going to find this to be a perfect place for them.
Are you going to keep the pink paint and wallpaper?
We're going to tear down this pink wallpaper and then repaint it pink. But certainly, you know, we were trying to make a splash, and I was joking today on social media, and I said, you know, when creative people take over a building, we like to first adjust the Pantones.
Tom Nardacci is founder and CEO of Gramercy Communications, which is beginning construction on its 13,000-square-foot Troy Innovation Garage. Nardacci spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1546. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.